Welcome to the Relatable Finance Podcast. Here are your hosts, Joseph Carl and Shane Phillips.
Welcome to today's episode of Relatable Finance. So today we're going to start out way back in during the Great Depression. So we're going back to the 1920s and 1930s, and it was during the Great Depression that it was estimated over half of the elderly in America lacked enough income to support themselves. So it was a really tough time. But it was especially tough on those that were no longer working. So this all led to what we're going to talk about today is Social Security. So Social Security, if you don't really know, is basically a social insurance program that you pay into the program, and then once you retire, they're going to pay you a certain amount out during retirement. And what we're going to look at today is just dive a little bit deeper into Social Security, how it was created, how it works, and then probably most importantly, its future. And will young people like us, or younger people like us, even get it?
Yeah, so as you'll learn today as we go through the episode, Social Security is a really important program for a lot of people out there. With that said, I don't think I've heard a whole lot of positive comments around Social Security. It's either not enough, the inflation adjustment should have been higher, or the program's not gonna be around when I retire. These are some common comments that we often hear. At the other end of the spectrum, there are some out there who believe Social Security is all they will need in retirement. Given the amount of baby boomers heading into retirement, as well as the amount of millennials now who are just starting their careers and entering the workforce, this is going to be a hotly debated political topic for years to come. Social Security is likely to be something that's a hot topic, and given all of these factors, we thought we'd shed some light on that today.
Yeah, so before we get into the history of Social Security, let's just talk about the general idea first. So the idea of it makes sense to me. It's for savings for retirement. And whether this is a role the government should be in charge of or not is up for debate and not something we're going to get into. But if it wasn't in place, there'd be many people who would hit retirement and just not have anything. So one statistic that I found was about 30% of Americans have less than $5,000 saved for retirement. So definitely not enough to last throughout retirement, and that's really where Social Security can fill a void.
Yeah, so you're telling me that 30% of our population has $5,000 or less saved for retirement outside of Social Security? $5,000 is definitely not enough to retire. I mean, you know, you'd have to spend a rather low amount in a given year to squeeze that one out. But nonetheless, it highlights how important the program is for a lot of people out there. It also begs the question, are people just not able to save enough outside of Social Security? Or do they say, hey, I have Social Security, so therefore I don't need to save any more for retirement? I'm sure it's a combination of both, but it leads to how important this program is.
Yeah, correct. So let's go actually way back further. Let's go back to the late 1800s. And this is where the general idea of a system like Social Security came up. And it was actually a private system. There was a piano and organ company that started withdrawing a small part of your paycheck, and that was going to be used to put into a pension fund, and you'd ultimately get paid out. It didn't work exactly how they wanted it to, but really the idea got started. And as I mentioned earlier, it was really during the Great Depression where it got some momentum. And if we go back to, like I said, the 1930s, some of the states were coming up with these elderly pension programs, but once again, they were inadequate. We saw this happening in Europe as well. Germany was one of the first to adopt it over there. And then it was actually in 1935 that President Roosevelt created what we know of today as the Social Security system. Taxes were started taking out of employees' accounts starting in 1937. And then the first payments were actually made to retirees starting in 1940.
Yeah, so let's fast forward to today where Social Security is primarily funded through FICA, or if you're self-employed, SECA. You're going to cover around 6.2% in 2019, and your employer will cover around 6.2%. If you're self-employed, that'll total around 12.4%. Not a whole amount of your income, depending on how much you make, which is called a regressive tax. In 2019, this is around $133,000. So if you make more than that, then you'll stop being taxed for Social Security purposes. In theory, the more you make or the more you pay into the system, the more you'll get out based on your 35 highest earning years. But there's also a cap to the benefit as well.
Yeah. So once again, back to the main reason why we're having the podcast today is that we get the question all the time about the future of Social Security, and it's really hotly debated, as we've mentioned. But, you know, if we're looking at somebody or people like ourselves in our 30s, is Social Security something that we can actually rely on? So there's been some estimates that the system will start drawing down principal starting this year, and that's the first time they'll be drawing down principal since 1982.
So what does drawing down principal mean? Well, we thought the best way to explain this and really the whole Social Security situation is using an analogy or a picture. So imagining a bathtub that is about half full of water. And since we are painting a visual here, to use an example, just visualize the cleanest bathtub you've ever seen. It's never been used before. So the water in the bathtub represents principal. It's from past contributions and investment gains that occurred before today. The faucet that is now running water represents contributions that we all make and any investment gains that the funds make in a given year. The more people pay into the program and the higher the investment gains, the more water coming out of the faucet. The drain represents the Social Security payments going out to those receiving benefits. If the amount of water coming out of the faucet exactly matches what's going down the drain, in theory, the level of water in the bathtub should stay exactly the same. However, if the water going down the drain is greater than what's coming out of the faucet, the level of the water will go down. This is essentially a visual of what drawing down principle looks like.
Yeah, and it's this drawing down that, like I said, is starting to occur. And the current estimates have this drawdown ending in those that amount of water in the tub being depleted at around 2035. So at that time, any water going into the tub will essentially be going directly out of that drain. So this is something that could be a serious problem. It's why it's being talked about. But it also doesn't mean that Social Security all of a sudden just dies. Like we said, money will be constantly flowing in because people will be putting money in, but most, if not all, of that will be flowing out as well. And if we do get to this point where there's nothing left in the tub, it's just flowing in and out, by law currently, benefits should be cut around by around 20%. And it's at that level where the inflows would be equaling the outflows, and those outflows would be cut by some percent.
So this kind of begs the question, how do we get here? Well, first of all, we as a society have been having less children, which ultimately means when everyone grows up and starts working, that there's less people paying into the system, i.e. less water coming out of the faucet. Next, there were a lot of babies born between 1946 and 1964. These are known as the baby boomers, and they're all getting or are already retiring. This makes a huge glut of people retiring in a concentrated time period, and essentially means there's a lot of water going down the drain. And finally, people are living longer than was initially projected when the program was created. If you think about it, people retire, let's say, around 65 or 67, but today life expectancy is around 85, and that's around 20 years in which they're going to be remaining on the program, quite a bit longer than what was initially thought when the program was established.
Yeah, so by no means to blame the baby boomers, but just a couple of stats to back up what Joe said. Currently, around 10,000 baby boomers are retiring every day. So if we fast forward to about 15 years from now, when that depletion of the assets would occur, the number of people age 65 and above will have grown from about 49 million today to about 79 million in 2035. So definitely makes sense why more money is flowing out of that tub than flowing in. But then again, back to the question of what does this all mean for the future? And it really is a question that nobody knows. It's brought up a lot. Different fixes are introduced, and really not a lot has happened. But I would think that going forward, call it 30 years to our retirement, I would probably expect these benefits to be either greatly watered down or probably drastically different than what we'd expect based upon what we've put into the system.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's going to be some sort of program around. Whether it remains in form exactly as we know it today is unknown. But if it is to continue to remain around, there has to be some changes. And this is where it becomes really political, because those who are currently in retirement are saying, hey, I've paid into this program for a long, long period of time, and I shouldn't have my benefits changed just because the program is not doing that well. I paid my fair share, therefore I'm due what the program should owe. On the other side of the coin, those who are currently contributing into the program are saying, you know, I shouldn't have to contribute more than I'm already contributing because the program may or may not even be around when I'm there. So this is where just a different perspective, different views is challenging from a political standpoint. We certainly need changes to be made for the program to remain around, but getting those changes done is going to be challenging.
Yeah, so lastly, we're just going to talk a little bit more real life, and the question we get a lot from clients is when to actually take benefits. So whether you're nearing retirement or you have friends or families or parents or grandparents nearing that age, when we look at the decision of when to take benefits, there's a kind of mathematical answer, but then there's also a lot of emotional factors that play a part as well. So briefly, how the system works is you can start taking benefits as early as age 62 in most cases, but if you wait until your full retirement age, which is for most age 67, you can get your full benefit amount. And if you delay taking benefits to age 70 or any time after your full retirement age, your benefit will actually go up. So you can take it early and get a smaller paycheck, or you can delay it and then get a bigger paycheck. And really what we're trying to figure out is when is it best to take it.
Yeah, so more often than not, people want to try to take Social Security sooner rather than later. And that may be a personal preference, but a lot of time the logic is, hey, I don't think I'm going to live forever, so I want to start this as soon as possible to make sure I get as many payments as I can. But there's actually a mathematical break-even point, and it's just somewhere between the age of 80 and 85 where the amount that you will have received if you took it early versus if you waited to take it later is actually the same. So if you end up living beyond that break-even point, you will have been better off by waiting and taking the higher payment. Some advice that we would, you know, more often give is that we would encourage most to try and wait as long as they can and defer taking Social Security to later on. The biggest risk for most in retirement is running out of money or running out of financial assets to provide for them. And by waiting or deferring taking Social Security, you're going to, as Shane mentioned, to get a higher and higher benefit. And that's going to essentially take less pressure off of any other financial assets that you might have.
Yeah, so definitely a lot of variables that go into this decision. You can only make kind of your best guess given those assumptions. But if we have a future where benefits may be reduced, it puts that question of when to take them probably even further into question. So a lot of different things to take into consideration. So just to recap what we talked about today regarding Social Security, Social Security came out of the Great Depression as many of the elderly were in poverty. The general idea is the forced saving for retirement that the government requires, which in theory we think is a pretty good idea. The future of Social Security is in question, largely because, going back to the example, more water is coming out of that drain that's going into the tub, but we'll probably talk a lot about that between now and when those assets are depleted. But Social Security is probably something that will remain in some way, shape, or form, largely because, like we said, a lot of people do depend on it. So that was today's episode of Relatable Finance. We'll talk to you next week.
Provenance Wealth Advisors is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services, Inc. Securities are offered through Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered through Provenance Wealth Advisors and Raymond James Financial Services Advisors, Inc. Any opinions are those of Relatable Finance Podcast and PWA, and not necessarily those of Raymond James. The information contained in this report does not purport to be a complete description of the securities, markets, or developments referred to in this material. There is no assurance that any of the trends mentioned will continue or forecasts will occur. The information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but Raymond James does not guarantee that the foregoing material is accurate or complete. Any information is not a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision and does not constitute a recommendation. Investment involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected. diversification and asset allocation do not ensure a profit or protect against a loss. Investing involves risk, and investors may incur a profit or loss. Raymond James does not provide tax or legal services. Please discuss these matters with the appropriate professional. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Future investment performance cannot be guaranteed, and investment yields will fluctuate with market conditions. Any examples given in the podcast are for illustration purposes only. Actual investor results will vary.